through the red column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Who is inside? Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hitting Season. This is episode number 482. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we got a special mailbag edition of the podcast coming your way. Went on to the Twitter machine to ask folks for some Phillies Major League Baseball related questions, so we will knock those down coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll talk about the injuries that have once again befallen this team. They just can't seem to stay healthy. And we'll talk about the Phils-Dodgers series and some of the issues the Phillies have had on the road over these last few seasons. Is there anything that is going to change with that at all coming up here this season? I don't believe that it is, but we're going to have to just kind of wait and see as this season unspools in front of us. So we're going to tackle all that here on this episode of Hitting Season 482. Plus, we will have your stat of the week. So let's jump right into this Phils-Dodgers series. The Phillies lose 2 out of 3 out in Los Angeles. We probably should have seen this coming, guys. I mean, the Phillies are not exactly road warriors here. And coming off of 3 home series wins, so, and they took 2 out of 3 from the Nationals, took 2 out of 3 from Atlanta, and then swept 2 games from the New York Yankees, we foolishly started to feel pretty good about this baseball team because they seemed to be getting healthier and they were playing their best baseball of the season. But we forgot a really important thing. That this team is a very good team at home and a very bad team on the road. It's really that simple. I mean, I wish there was more nuance to it, guys, but there just isn't. This team plays great at home and they play like crap on the road. Since 2017, the Phillies have a .561 winning percentage at home, .173 and .135. All right, that's a first-place baseball team. That's at the very least, a wild card team at home. 173 and 135 at home since 2017. That's Pete McCannon's last season with the team, okay? So this ain't new, all right? Over that same stretch since 2017, the Phillies are on the road, 115 and 189 for a .378 winning percentage. That's real bad baseball. Now, most teams are going to be better at home than on the road. That's a given, but not to this degree. This is an obscene degree, and as Kevin Cooney noted in a piece in the Philly Voice this week, offensively, the Phillies have been pretty similar at home and away from home. And I think when we think about what the issues are with the Phillies, we tend to think of the offense as being the problem on the road, but that's really not the case. The offensive slash lines for the Phillies at home, .245 average, .328 on base, .713 OPS, are about the same as on the road, .237 average, so a couple points below, a .303 on base, and a .691 OPS. So when you compare the OPS, .713 at home, .691 on the road, that's not a huge difference. They're all right around the middle of the pack, ranging from 12th to 17th in those split comparisons within Major League Baseball. It's the pitching where you see the big difference between the Phillies' home and road splits. Phillies pitchers have a 3.48 ERA and 1.16 WHIP at home so far in 2021. That's both top 11 in Major League Baseball. On the road, their ERA this year is 4.89, and the WHIP is 1.39, both bottom 10 here in 2021. So this season, at the very least, the pitching has been a huge issue. While the offense has been not great in either place, they've been middle of the pack, both at home and on the road, but the differences haven't been stark. Not like they have been with pitching the baseball. Now, this week in Los Angeles, it was more the pitching staff than it was. I mean, it was more the hitting than the pitching staff than it was really holding the Phillies back. The Phillies did manage to win the series finale against the Dodgers 2-1 on Wednesday night. Rhys Hoskins broke out of his crippling funk, hit a home run in the first inning on Wednesday night, breaking an 0-for-33 slump. Hector Neris bounced back with a nice save to preserve the 2-0 win in the series finale. Zach Wheeler had a really good start. We're going to talk about him in just a second. Hector Neris bouncing back with a nice save was refreshing because he has really struggled at Dodger Stadium. Myself, Justin and Liz talked about Hector Neris and some of the ballparks in which he has a big problem. Two of the ballparks in which he has a big problem are Dodger Stadium and in San Francisco, which is the Phillies' next stop. He was 0-2 with an 11.81 ERA and one blown save in six career appearances at Dodger Stadium going into the game on Wednesday night. He allowed 5 home runs in 5 1/3 innings there, including home runs in 3 straight plate appearances, back-to-back-to-back home runs back in April of 2017. You guys remember that loss when he gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs and blew a save in Los Angeles. So he's got all that history, and he didn't have a great week last week against the Braves and the Yankees. Now, in the lead that he blew against the Braves, team was only up 1-0, and he gave up a solo home run to Freddie Freeman. Again, I'm not blaming Hector Neris for that. I'm not going to get on his case about giving up a solo home run to Freddie Freeman. Okay, that's just going to happen. But the blown save against the Yankees was a little bit more infuriating. And Hector Neris has had a very good season this year, but he does have these periods. He does have these times where he does blow saves. So he's not the most dependable guy in the league. But he did bounce back and had a very nice save to preserve the 2-0 win in the series finale on Wednesday. Zach Wheeler went 6 innings in the game. Didn't have his best stuff. Wasn't able to pitch quite as deep as he had been, but still his numbers on the season are pretty incredible. A 3.4 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. 2.15 ERA in 14 starts. 2.15 ERA. He leads the National League in strikeouts, has an 11.02 strikeouts per nine and a 2.06 walks per nine. And if you're starting to think, is Zach Wheeler a Cy Young candidate? He's certainly a candidate. And where he is right now, he probably is a finalist. He's a top 3 vote getter right now. But there's no doubt Jacob deGrom is the best pitcher in baseball and should be the de facto National League Cy Young Award winner pretty much moving forward. But that may be in jeopardy if deGrom can't stay healthy. Once again this week, he had to leave a start early. He lasted just 3 innings with a sore shoulder. And he's had some different issues going on. In his previous start back on Friday, he left a game after 6 innings with flexor tendonitis. He was pulled from his start on May 9th after 5 innings with right side tightness, missed 2 starts after that. He was also scratched from a start on May 4th because of the same issue. Now, DeGrom said the tests after the game showed no decrease in his arm strength, so the thinking is he's not going to miss a start, but this has been a troubling trend for Jacob deGrom. The Mets would be wise, I think, to shut him down for just a little while and let him get healthy. And so you wonder if deGrom misses some time, will that hurt him in the Cy Young voting? Probably not, given how unbelievable he has been. He has a 0.54 ERA through 11 starts this year and a 4.0 wins above replacement, which is far and above the best in Major League Baseball. Wheeler is second at 3.4. So Wheeler, I mean, DeGrom is so far better than everybody else, but Wheeler is not, you know, he's not light years behind, but, you know, 0.6 of a win above replacement at this stage in the season is huge. DeGrom is striking out 14.9 batters per nine this season and walking 1.07, and he's pitched 29 fewer innings than Wheeler. So no, I don't think Zach Wheeler, unless Jacob DeGrom misses a month this season or something like that, I don't think he's going to get penalized for missing time. He's been that unbelievably good. But of course, earlier in this series against the Dodgers, the Phillies lost the first game of the series 3-1. They took an early 1-0 lead in that game. It looked like the offense was going to continue doing what they did in against the Yankees at Citizens Bank Park, but then the bats just absolutely went silent. Spencer Howard pitched decently in this ballgame, and that's one of the things we were keeping an eye on. Would Spencer Howard be able to maintain his velocity in that game? Would he be able to pitch a little bit deeper? He did better this time around. He went 4 innings, maintained his velocity, but started the 5th inning and ran into trouble immediately. He ended up giving up 3 earned runs. His ERA is at 5.09. Struck out 4, walked just 1 in the game. So a better outing for Spencer Howard. Certainly something for him to build on in this particular game. Jonathan Brogdon pitched an inning in relief. And then Bailey Falter finished up the game. Went 3 innings, gave up 1 hit and 1 strikeout in those 3 innings of work. But the offense just couldn't do a whole lot. They did get 8 hits on the night, but went 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. So an old bugaboo hitting with runners in scoring position was the death knell for the Phillies in the first game of the series on Monday. And then on Tuesday, the Phillies lost to the Dodgers 5-3. Phillies ended up tying the game at 3-3 in the fifth inning, but some late runs, some late heroics by Mookie Betts in that one was the difference. The Phillies, again, just weren't able to scratch out much offense, just 6 hits on the day, and the team, again, 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Andrew McCutchen hit his 11th home run of the season. But, of course, in the game here on Tuesday, the Phillies suffered some injuries. It was a rough game altogether. Bryce Harper had to leave the game in the fourth inning after swinging too hard and hurting his back again. We're going to talk about Bryce in just a second. And Gene Segura could miss some significant time here with a groin injury. Let's be honest. Gene Segura, I think, has been the team's MVP this year. When he's been healthy, he's easily been the team's best hitter. We were just talking about it on the last podcast, how Odubel Herrera at the top of the lineup and Gene Segura hitting number two have been a tremendous help to this team, especially since the calendar flipped to June. Having those two guys set the table has really helped the middle of the lineup and the bottom of the lineup keep things rolling. Well, now Gene Segura is going to be gone probably till next month. And remember, Segura is a guy who got destroyed for not hustling 2 years ago on the player Andrew McCutchen tore his ACL. Well, he suffered a grade one groin strain running out a ground ball in the ninth inning of Tuesday night's loss to the Dodgers. He probably will not be back until July. He was hitting .332 on the season with an .845 OPS, 3 home runs, 20 RBIs, playing at an all-star level at second base, but now you can kiss that all-star game goodbye, it would seem. Nick Maton has been recalled and will get a lion's share of the starts at second base, one would think, moving forward. So that's a devastating injury for this team. I never really would have thought that I would call a Gene Segura injury devastating, but that's kind of where we are right now in the Gene Segura story here in Philadelphia. Perhaps a more troubling trend has been what's going on with Bryce Harper. Now, he is expected to be back in the lineup this weekend against the San Francisco Giants, but he had to leave Tuesday night's game again in the fourth inning after another swing where he tweaked his lower back again. This is the second time this season Bryce Harper has missed some time because of his bad back. And this comes on the heels of last year when he struggled down the stretch because of a bad back. He started his offseason hitting program a month later to help give his back more time. And they eased him into spring training this spring to try and give his back a little bit more time. It hasn't worked. I don't know if this is all because Bryce is over aggressive when he swings. If his swing is, we've always known and we talked about Bryce Harper's violent swing. He's always had a violent swing, and you wonder if this is the result. Is that as a 28-year-old guy, that these nagging back injuries are going to be a problem for him the rest of his career? Because when the Phillies signed him to this $330 million contract, a 13-year, $330 million contract, they were getting a guy who was in his mid-20s. Who had years of his prime left. But in his Phillies career so far, he has dealt with more nagging injuries than I think any of us were expecting. I mean, he can't help getting hit by a pitch, and he got hit by a pitch in the face and on the wrist or on the and the elbow, and that was bothering him for much of the season, and that's why he went on the injured list earlier this year, not because of his back. He hasn't been on the injured list because of his back yet. He has these tweaks where it starts to spasm on him, and so he said he could have played the game on Wednesday, but they kept him out of the lineup just as a precaution. The team had an off day on Thursday, so they figured let's give him 2 days to rest the back. But this is more than just a nagging concern, guys. This is, you don't want to have a power hitter with back problems. It's one of the things that ended Don Mattingly's career early. It has ended a number of careers early. These back issues can be a killer. It can sap, and we need Bryce Harper to be a power hitter. You know, if he's a leadoff guy at the top of the lineup where he's not hitting the ball out of the ballpark, that's not what the Phillies need from him. They need him to be a middle of the order bat. And when he's been healthy, he's played well. And I know there's been a lot of people who have been talking about, you know, did the Phillies make the right decision in signing Bryce Harper? Should they have gone with Manny Machado? Well, I wrote a piece for The Good Fight this week, and looking at some of the numbers, I still think the Phillies, at least according to the numbers so far, the Phillies have made the right decision. When you compare these two numbers, Harper, since they signed their contract, since 2019, Harper's been worth 7.6 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. Machado has been worth 7.1. Harper has an OPS of 894. Machado's is 817. That's a big difference. Harper's OPS of 894 is 14th in baseball since the start of the 2019 season. Machado is at 61st. Harper's weighted runs created is 133. Machado's is 116. According to those numbers, Harper has the clear edge. If you look over the last two seasons, though, Machado's been the more valuable player. He's a 4.0 FWAR compared to Harper's 3.0. Now, Harper's been the superior offensive player with a 913 OPS compared to Machado's 844, and his weighted runs created of 145 is much better than Manny's 127. Machado's value comes in his defense, where he has outperformed Harper in all of the defensive metrics by a wide margin, and Machado's been healthier. So I don't think if you go over the numbers, it's impossible to say choosing Harper over Machado was a mistake. So far, it hasn't, based on their performances. The worry is about the future here. There is another decade left on Harper's contract, and these nagging injuries don't appear to be slowing down. The back injury specifically is a big worry. A player with back pain just can't hit for power. And if Harper's not hitting for power, the offense and their $330 million investment is sunk. It just is. And one of the biggest selling points for Harper as a free agent was his age, just 26 at the time of his signing. He's still just 28 years old, but if he's got a bulky back, he's all of a sudden going to be a guy who's 28 in a 33 or 34-year-old's body. So this is a problem. This is a worry, okay? And I'm trying not to be doom and gloom about it, because apparently this is, again, this time not going to be something that keeps him out. But I don't see how you can be a Phillies fan and not be worried about Bryce Harper's back right now. I just don't understand how you can look at what's gone on these last 2 years and not be a little bit concerned about Bryce Harper's back. You're going to always be worried with every swing. Is that the one that's going to put him out for 2 months? It's a real concern that I don't know is ever going to go away. I don't want it to be something where it's like Chase Utley's knees. You know, Chase Utley's knee, who knows how good Chase Utley could have been if his knees had held up, if he didn't have that degenerative problem in his knees. You can't control that as a player. I mean, Bryce Harper can't control that. It's not to blame Bryce Harper for any of this, but it is a concern. It is a definite worry that his back is going to be a problem for this team long term. And then, of course, you've got Didi Gregorius, who hopefully is close to returning. He was diagnosed with something called pseudo-gout in his elbow. I had never heard of this before. These are calcium crystals that form in the blood. The team says it's not particularly concerning. GM Sanfold said they're just working on getting some medication for him that will hopefully clear that up. Gregorius has not played since May 12th. He's appeared in just half the team's games so far this year because of these elbow issues. They initially thought it was because he dove on it or he got hit with a pitch or something, but it has had nothing to do with those different things. So he is expected to resume his rehab assignment in AAA this week. Once he gets the medicine going, it should bring the swelling down. And then he could rejoin the Phillies when they return to Philadelphia next Tuesday. But it really stinks, because just in this last episode of the podcast, we were talking about this Phillies team finally getting healthy, finally getting all of their guys back. And hey, listen, if Gregorius comes back next week and Bryce Harper is okay, then they'll have everyone healthy except for Gene Segura. But you would just love to get this whole lineup together just once so that we could really see what this team could be, especially on the road against two really good teams like this. And so if you're the Phillies, I'm not feeling very confident about this series against the Giants. I don't know how you could be. This team has not played well in San Francisco over the years, and the Giants have the best record in the National League right now. So this is another tall, tall order for the Phillies going in against their former manager, Gabe Kapler, who has the San Francisco Giants playing some pretty terrific baseball. When we come back, we'll take a quick break, but we'll go over the Phillies mailbag. We'll dip into the Twitter mailbag questions. We'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so let's jump into the mailbag here. And the first is probably the best, maybe one of the best mailbag questions I've ever gotten from this is from the Fransky in LA Twitter feed, the great at Fransky LA Twitter feed. They ask, which has been the worst playoff drought of your lifetime, both as a fan and as an organization? 1984 to 92, 1994 to 2006, or 2012 to now? This is a great question. I don't think 2012 to now has been, because we were coming off that great run from 2007 to 2011. Plus, I have more distractions now as a dad with little kids. I don't spend as much of my brain power obsessing over the Phillies or sports, and certainly not like I did when I was in my age 8 to 13 years, or whatever the drought was. See, 84 to 92, that would have been age 8 until 16. So that was a long time. And those were formative years. That's why I still hold a very special place in my heart for those Von Hayes, Juan Samuel, Chris James teams. And of course, 93 was just an unbelievable gift and a huge surprise. But I think the 94 to 2006 time period was flat out more straight up depressing. Because at least with 2012 to now, you at least felt like something was, you were building towards something. You never got the feeling from 94 to 2006 that they were building anything, at least until Jim Thome came. When Jim Thome came, that really started to signal that maybe things were going to be a little bit different. But the team from those late 90s, early 2000s Phillies, they had nothing to root for. And they were still playing games at Veterans Stadium. And by this point, Veterans Stadium had just become a death trap. I mean, you just didn't want to go into that toilet bowl. It was just a horrible place to go watch baseball. At least from 84 to 92, there was still, you still had the multicolored seats, and it had more charm to it. By the late 90s, that place had lost all of its charm, and there were no superstars to gravitate towards. You had the Scott Rolen thing, which sucked all the life out of the franchise, and there was never anything there that you could really hold on to. They kept trying to grab onto that 93 run, but eventually Darren Dalton gets traded away, and you bring in Greg Jeffries, but you just know that the team isn't going anywhere every single season. At least with 84 to 92, I was too young, I think, to really understand how bad things were, and I think there were more interesting young players. Mike Schmidt was still there for a number of those years. Juan Samuel was an interesting player. The Phillies made some interesting trades and brought over guys like John Kruk and Lenny Dykstra for those first few years. I actually really enjoyed that 92 season. I know it was a brutal season, but it was all because of pitching injuries. That 92 season was a lot of fun. There were some times in the early 90s where you had the car crash with Lenny Dykstra and Darren Dalton coming from John Kruk's bachelor party. There were some not so great times, but there were some fun times. Like in 1990, when Dykstra got off to that really hot start, was hitting over 400, was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. There was some fun moments there. You had Terry Mulholland pitching a no-hitter. You had Tommy Green pitching a no-hitter during those times. So I think those 1984 to 92 years, they were a little bit more fun for me. I remember a lot more. There were a lot more enjoyable moments from those teams. There was nothing enjoyable from 94 until about 2003, when Jim Thome got there. In 2003, Thome provided some really fun moments. And then some of the young talent started to arrive. That's when Jimmy Rollins started. And that's when Pat Burrell was there. And that's when you saw Ryan Howard come up. I mean, Ryan Howard had a 2005 Rookie of the Year campaign. He was MVP in 2006. I mean, you started to really feel like maybe something was building there. But it wasn't enough to offset the dregs of the mid to late 90s, early 2000s. So for me, the 94 to 2006 drought has been the worst of my lifetime. I think it was the worst for the organization. I still can't believe Jim Thome signed in Philadelphia, given the history of that team. 2012 to 2021 has been pretty darn frustrating, though. We were sold a bill of goods about the rebuild and tearing it all down, and I'm not sure we're ever gonna see the fruit of that. I'm not sure that this. I mean, there's the other thing too is there's more of an opportunity now to make the playoffs than there was in the late 90s, early 2000s. The Phillies, if there had been two wild card teams or three wild card teams, would have made the playoffs in some of those early 2000 seasons. So maybe this current drought is worse. because they have had more opportunities to make the postseason and haven't been able to do it. But I'm still going to go with that 94 to 2006 run, specifically that 94 to 2002 stretch where it was impossible and no one liked baseball in Philadelphia. No one was talking baseball. WIP was not allowed to talk baseball. When I worked there in 1999 and 2000, 2001, they were not allowed to talk about baseball unless there was a no-hitter or something like that. That's how persona non grata the Phillies were in Philadelphia. All right, Sweet Lou at Sweet Louie asks, would you be content for the Phillies to remain a perennially 500 team, but with most of the wins being walk-offs and drubbings? I may be. No. A 500 baseball team, I don't care how they're winning those games. You know, if you're making good memories, maybe a few seasons of that is fine, but not forever. Not forever. No, there's nothing like celebrating division titles. There's nothing like the postseason, and you just don't. Even when you're enjoying all those wins, it's not like playing in the postseason. So I would not be content for the Phillies to remain a perennially 500 team like they have been these last few seasons, but with most of the wins being walk-offs and drubbings. Those walk-offs are excitement, but they're empty. They're hollow if it doesn't lead to something more in October. And that doesn't mean you have to win the World Series every year, but if you're not playing October baseball, your team's just not going to be worth watching. You know, if you know there's no payoff at the end, I just don't know why you would watch, to be perfectly honest. All right. Who are the most likely trade waiver acquisitions for the Phillies? I got a number of questions like this. Justin DeVirgilio asked me this question. There's a couple others. There's a few of them here. Okay, but I got a couple questions like this. And here's what I'm going to say about the trade deadline and what the Phillies might be doing here. I'm going to tackle a couple of these questions at once. The Phillies, I do believe, will be, I don't think they're going to be hardcore buyers and they're not going to be hardcore sellers. I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. They're not going to be, I just don't think this division is going to allow anyone to give up on the season. And at the same time, I don't think the Phillies are good enough to allow Dave Dombrowski to push his chips into the table, whatever the few chips that he has, to put his chips into the middle of the table and say, yeah, I think we've got enough here to really make a big charge and go out and get somebody. Because you have to go over the luxury tax in order to do that. And John Middleton's not doing that unless they feel like they're a player away from the World Series. When you watch this Phillies team, they're not there. So I don't think this is a hardcore buying at the trade deadline situation. I think they'll do what they've done in the last few seasons. I think they'll make small additions, and I think they'll focus on the bullpen, which I think does need some help. You can't rely on Jose Alvarado. He had a good game. He had a very good outing on Wednesday in the 2-0 win over the Dodgers, but you just can't rely on that. Archie Bradley may be starting to come around, and Hector Neris, you know, again, is kind of an up-and-down guy, but his overall numbers are good. But you've got guys like Connor Brogdon who are inexperienced. They need another guy in the bullpen, if not another two guys in the bullpen. And bullpen pieces, especially if they're on expiring contracts, aren't going to cost you a whole lot. Could the Phillies use another starter? Sure. But as Mike Petriello wrote this week, there's nothing out there. There's nothing out there. There's a ton of injuries right now. If the Washington Nationals were looking to trade Max Scherzer, that's in jeopardy because he's hurt. He notes that Detroit's Matthew Boyd is hurt. So is Detroit's Spencer Turnbull, Colorado's John Gray, Kansas City's Danny Duffy, Arizona's Madison Bumgarner, Minnesota's Michael Pineda, Baltimore's John Means, all injured right now. And then some of the other pitchers who could be available have been bad. Tyler Anderson, Dylan Bundy, Jay Happ, Mike Fultonavich, Merrill Kelly, Mike Minor, Matt Harvey, all of them with ERAs well over 5, if not into the 6s and 7s. The Giants were supposed to be a seller, but they're really competitive, so they're not going to shop anybody. He notes that the Reds will probably keep Sonny Gray for a run. Maybe the Rockies trade German Marquez, or Jose Berrios might be on the block for Minnesota, but because there are so few other pitchers on the market, you're going to have to give up a lot to get those different kinds of guys. And then there's a guy like Kyle Gibson, who has never been a good pitcher, but is pitching well this year. You know, there is not a lot out there in the starting pitching market, so even if the Phillies wanted to go out and get something, I'm just not sure there's a whole lot out there. I'm just not sure there's a whole lot out there for them to go get. So, you know, what do the Phillies need? Well, they could certainly use maybe some outfielder, some outfield help. I mean, it depends on Gene Segura. If Gene Segura is going to be out a little while, maybe you go get some second base help. You know, maybe you go get Adam Frazier. You know, he's having a good year for the Pirates. You know, maybe, you know, you just go out and get like a multi-positional guy like Josh Harrison or Asdrubal Cabrera, I don't want to bring Asdrubal Cabrera back, but those are some, those are some possibilities. But, you know, you're not looking at center field anymore. Odubel Herrera is doing the job in center field. Andrew McCutchen, for all his ups and downs, is second on the team in home runs. You're probably not going to swap out Andrew McCutchen. You're not doing anything about right field. So, you know, if you're looking at around the team is what they are. You know, this baseball team is what it is. So I think you're going to go out and you're going to get a relief pitcher or two, and maybe you go get a bench bat. Maybe you go get a bench bat that can hit right-handed so that you don't have to play Matt Joyce quite so often. But those are the kinds of things you're looking for from the Phillies at the trade deadline. They're not going to make a splash because all the positions are spoken for. There's really nowhere to put anybody. It's not like they have a big hole at a position where they can slide in a star player. Alec Bohm is underperformed, but you're not trading for a third baseman to sit Alec Bohm. You're not doing that. So, relief pitcher. Maybe you can find a back-end starter that's not going to cost you very much if you don't want to do this Spencer Howard, Bailey Falter piggyback situation. All right, this is a good question. Regina Wilson at Margaritanoir. Hang on, let me read this right. Margaritanoir. At Margaritanoir. Regina Wilson is a good follower. She's always responding to stuff on Twitter. I'm sorry I butchered the Twitter handle there. Any thoughts on whether any of our Phillies pitchers will be impacted by the foreign substances crackdown? If so, which ones? Well, who knows? you know, I don't think it's Aaron Nola because he's been up and down. I don't want to name names because I don't know. I don't know that anybody's using anything. Maybe everyone on the Phillies is perfectly clean. Let me make clear as day, that I am not calling any Phillies pitcher out on using anything foreign substance related. People will be able to make judgments if numbers change drastically over these next few months, or if there are things, if there are more injuries to the pitching staff, we will see. But let's just wait and see on that one. You know, we'll just wait and see on that one. All right, what else do we have here? SSGT Snuffy asks, what is Wayne Gomes doing right now? I don't have the slightest idea what Wayne Gomes is doing right now, Sergeant Snuffy, but it's a good question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried should the Phillies fans be about the remainder of the Harper contract? This comes from You Want Philly Philly at CMChu126. I've got to quantify this, huh? I would say right now I am at about a 6.5 to a 7. And that's about where I would be if I were a Phillies fan. I would be probably at about a 7. Not that I think he's necessarily going to be out for the year or anything, but what I'm worried about is that this guy is going to have this nagging back problem with him for years. Because this isn't, I mean, back problems don't, you don't take a pill and fix it. So I don't know. I just feel like this is something where it's going to nag him enough to sap him of his power. It's going to nag him enough to not make him as effective. It's going to nag him enough to keep him out of the lineup for a week at a time. And that's the worry with Bryce Harper, because the contract is so long and because you signed him to have him on your team in his prime. If his prime is going to be taken up with nagging back problems, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that, but you're getting kind of damaged goods in that case. So I'm at about a 7. I would have Phillies at about a 7. I think that's fair. And people can tell me, you know, Joe Girardi can say, you know, he's not worried about it all he wants. Bryce Harper can say he's not worried about it all he wants. I'm worried about it. I am worried about it. And Kale Kreese asked the same question. How concerned should we be? Is this the beginning of an Utley's knees situation? They signed him to be the anchor of this lineup for years to come. He can't do that if he can't stay on the field. I couldn't agree more with you. Absolutely. That is absolutely a concern. Anthony Arrett, good friend of the podcast, at Anthony underscore Arrett, asks, if the Phillies continue this one-step-forward, two-step-back play, are they buyers at the deadline, or do they sell and try to focus on the future? Like I said, I will address the second part of this. I don't think they're selling. They're not selling. This team is not going to sell. If they really fall out of it, if Gene Segura doesn't come back and Harper misses time and Gregorius doesn't come back and this team is 10 games under 500 at the trade deadline, if they sell, they're selling Hector Neris, they're selling Archie Bradley, they're selling Andrew McCutchen. That's what they're doing. They're not blowing things up. They've invested too much time and too much money into this. They're not blowing anything up. So I wouldn't expect that. I do think it's more likely that they'll still be 3 games, 4 games, 5 games out of first place. They'll still be in the periphery, and Dombrowski will make some small changes, like I mentioned just a minute ago. But I don't think there's going to be a focus on the future, we need to sell kind of situation. I do not see that coming. Amanda C. at MandaB310 asks, the Mets are ahead in the division right now, but they have a ton of games to make up. The next time we play them will be their third doubleheader that week, and they might only have 1 day off the rest of this month. Do you think the Mets might met and the standings could tighten by July? That's a very good point, Amanda, because the Mets are going to have to make up these games. They are going to have to, you know, let the rest of the division catch up. Right now, they are 4.5 games up on the Phillies in the NL East. They are 9 games over 500. They have the third best record in the National League. All right, they are right now playing good baseball. They're 7-3 in their last 10, and they have a plus 22 run differential. That's not off the charts, but they have to be concerned about Jacob DeGrom. They absolutely do, but they have had more injuries to deal with than the Phillies have, and they have had more rainouts. It is going to be a big deal for them to have to play all of these games. We saw what happened to the Phillies last year when they had to make up all of those doubleheaders, and they had so few days off down the stretch, it really hurt them. So that's a good point. There's a chance that that could happen to the New York Mets too. I think it's if Jacob DeGrom is not 100% and they have to go through all those different things, then yes, this race could absolutely tighten by July. Because the Mets are not a juggernaut. They're having offensive problems, but their pitching has been very good. And if they're having to piggyback pitchers or playing all these doubleheaders, yes. Yes, that's a very good point. It's very astute of you to point that out. Things absolutely could tighten up by July. The thing you have to worry about are teams behind the Phillies. Could they jump up? But man, the Atlanta Braves are still struggling. They're still four games under 500 at 31-35. They're 6.5 back. They are still struggling. The Nationals are not coming around anytime soon. The Marlins are 10 games under 500. How can that team be 10 games under 500? They're like 20 games over 500 against the Phillies these last few years. How can that be? Anyway, one last question. We got a couple more here. Behind the Plate at Behind the Plate 4 asks, who do you think will replace Kutch next season in left field? In light of Didi's diagnosis of pseudo gout in his right elbow, do you think the Phillies will target a free agent shortstop in the offseason and make Didi a DH? If so, which shortstop should the Phillies go after? All right, let's talk about the Kutch question first here. Will they go after a left fielder next year? I think they're going to have to. I don't think there is anybody. There's nobody in the system. There's nobody in the Phil's minor league system that can come up and play left field on a regular basis. I think that it's going to behoove the Phillies to go out and, you know, go out and get an outfielder, because, you know, there's only so many things you can move around. I mean, maybe they move Alec Bohm out to left field. Maybe they try that. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, but I'm looking at the rest of the market here. You've got guys like, you know, AJ Pollock's going to be a free agent, but that's not an upgrade from McCutchen. Tommy Pham is going to be a free agent. He'll be 34. Corey Dickerson will be 33. He'll be a free agent. Eddie Rosario will be 30 years old. So, I mean, there's a possibility. But if you're looking at left fielders, the options are not awesome. If you're looking, you know, kind of looking at both corner outfielders, if you want to, you know, put right fielders into the mix here and maybe they can make a switch. Michael Conforto is a free agent that season. So unless the Mets re-sign him to a long-term deal, Michael Conforto could be a free agent at the end of the season. You've got Nick Castellanos, who's going to be a free agent. He plays right field, but he's a dreadful defender. You don't really want him out there. You've got Charlie Blackman, who'll be 36. So you're probably not going in that direction. So Gregory Polanco is a right fielder, but maybe you can move him to left field. Nomar Mazara is a guy with a ton of talent. He'll be just 27 years old, but has never been able to put it all together. So, you know, I don't know. There's some interesting names out there. I think a guy you would love to see go out and get is Michael Conforto. He'll be an unrestricted free agent after this year, and the Mets have still not signed him to a long-term deal. So, you know, you just subtract a really good player from the Mets and bring him over to the Phillies. I think that would certainly be a possibility. Talking about Didi Gregorius at shortstop, yes, you could certainly move him to shortstop. One of the other things that has been talked about with Didi Gregorius is moving him over to third base if you want to move on and move Alec Boehm off of third base and put him at first base. And then if you make Rhys Hoskins the DH, you could do that. Maybe you have Bryce Harper playing more DH there. I think the Phillies could figure something out if they wanted to go out and they wanted to invest in one of the phenomenal shortstops who will be on the market. And, of course, we're talking about Trevor Story will be a free agent. Corey Seager will be a free agent. Brandon Crawford's having a tremendous season. We didn't have him listed as one of these great shortstop free agents, but he'll be on the market. Carlos Correa will be 27 when he hits the market. Javier Baez will be 29 when he hits the market. So there's all these different guys who will be available. If you're asking me who I want Corey Seager. I want Corey Seager. You know what? Boy, do I want Corey Seager or do I want Carlos Correa? It's a tough choice. Correa is a year younger, which is why I might lean in that direction. Looking at their numbers this year, Carlos Correa is having an outstanding season for the Astros. Second among shortstops in wins above replacement, 2.7. He's hitting .293. .384, .508 this season, 12 homers, 46 runs, 37 RBIs. This guy's having a phenomenal season. Weighted runs created of 150. Good night. So he's probably at the top of my list right now, but he's going to cost so much money. I just don't see how the Phillies could afford him. Brandon Crawford, by the way, is fifth among major league shortstops with a 2.2 wins above replacement, .249, .338, .528 slugging percentage for him, weighted runs created of 135, 15 home runs for Brandon Crawford so far this season. Freddie Galvis, look at Freddie Galvis with a 1.3 wins above replacement, 9 home runs for the Baltimore Orioles right now. And then you got Trevor Story is a little bit far down the list, 1.2 wins above replacement, hitting just .251, .332, .415, just 5 home runs on the season for Trevor Story with 11 stolen bases. Francisco Lindor was supposed to be a member of this group, but no longer is. And then Corey Seager, looking up Corey Seager's numbers, where the heck is Corey Seager? Corey Seager has played in 52 and just 37 games this year. He has been hurt, so he doesn't qualify among the league leaders, but a 0.8 FOR, hitting .265, .361, only slugging .422, but he's always been a pretty good guy with the lumber. Has 4 home runs, 20 runs scored, 22 RBIs. Corey Seager would be a great fit, but, you know, I think this Phillies team needs some more right-handed bats, especially when Andrew McCutchen leaves. I would go after Corey Seager. I mean, I would go after Carlos Correa of all the shortstops if the Phillies had the money to do that. But, folks, I don't think the Phillies have the money to go hard after a shortstop. I know they're going to free up money with Andrew McCutchen leaving, but that's $25 million average annual value, according to, and you're going to, you know, you're not going to have Archie Bradley. You're not going to have Hector Neris's money. So there is money that's getting freed up. I get it. There is going to be money that's not there, but those are three players you got to replace, and you're going to dump that all into one guy. If it's Carlos Correa, it might be worth it. You know what I mean? But I'm a little worried Carlos Correa is going to be a $30 million a year player. Paul Pazimino, great friend of the podcast, at Paul Paz, asks, watching the defense of Torres and Williams on Wednesday night was refreshing. If Boehm continues to be at least average, do they have a decent shot of not finishing in the basement defensively? And if so, how many games is that worth? Not much. I think it's going to be a situation where Boehm is not going to dramatically improve his defense. And Torres and Williams are just, they're not going to play a whole lot. this year. You know, I mean, it was refreshing, though. I do agree with you that watching them play good defense was refreshing. If Bohm continues to be average, I think Gregorius comes back and Segura comes back, and you're just hoping those guys bash the ball. If Torres and Williams are back, yes, the defense helps you, but you're going to lose so much offensively. It's going to be a net negative as far as I can tell. So I think that, and then, let me see. Did I get one more in here? Yeah. Okay. One more. Michael Colazzo, M. Colazzo 215 asks, John, is there any chance Didi Gregorius upon his return would start some games at third base or first base and give Alec Bohm or Rhys Hoskins a break and keep Ronald Torres's good glove at shortstop? Again, you can't take Rhys out of the lineup. You can't really take Alec out of the lineup. I do think maybe you can mix some things around, but I don't know that I'm taking those guys out of the lineup just so I can get Ronald Torres's glove in at shortstop. I would rather take my chances of Gregorius at shortstop, Bohm at third, Hoskins at first, and hit the ball. I think that's the Phil's best chance of winning here in 2021. Ronald Torres is a really good bench player. He's been a really good addition to this team. He's been a very solid addition. But for my money, I'm keeping those three guys on the field. If you're going to give guys a break, then yes. Yes, you could move Gregorius over to third base to give Alec Bohm, to give Rhys Hoskins some days off here and then. But I'm only doing that to give those guys rest. I'm not doing that specifically so I can get Ronald Torres in the lineup. That's not my motivation for doing that. If that happens sometimes and Torres plays good defense, then that's a bonus. But that's not my motivation for doing that. So my response to the question is more the motivation of why you're moving Gregorius over as opposed to the effect of having Torres in the lineup. Having him in the lineup and having him on the field does help you defensively, and maybe he does win you a game or two that way. Thank you so much, guys, for the mailbag questions. Really good mailbag edition of the podcast here, and we'll do this again maybe next month. We'll try and do these mailbag questions every month or so, because I know this team really raises a lot of questions every single week. All right, folks, let's do our stat of the week here. When Hoskins homered to end his 0-for-33 slump on Wednesday night, he was just 3 at-bats away from tying the franchise record of 0-for-36, held by 3 players: Desi Relaford in 1998, Len Matuzic in the 1982 and 83 seasons, and Danny Murtaugh over the 1942 and 43 seasons. And folks, that is going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you so much for joining the podcast once again. Don't forget, if you haven't done so already, become a member of the Hittin' Season Patreon. We've got extra bonus podcasts over there for you. I've got a baseball card video series that I really need to get another episode up on, so I will be doing that, if not this week, then this weekend. So make sure to check out that. We've got movie reviews on there. Lots of fun stuff. So go to patreon.com/hittin'season and sign up on the $5 a month tier to support the podcast and get some extra bonus stuff. And don't forget to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.